And now, the Edward Black Show. Sponsored by the books of Edwin Black. Available on Amazon and at booksellers worldwide. And now, here's Edwin.
Hey, this is Edwin Black. Hello, everybody. This is the premiere episode of the Edwin Black Show. I'd like to introduce my guest, Nat Lewin, famed civil rights attorney in the United States. And Richard Heidemann, who is an expert in international law in terms of terrorism and other things. And in fact, he was, in fact, the head of B'nai B'rith when I believe it was an official NGO. So this is our very first Zoom TV event. And I can assure you, there are going to be plenty of technical errors. And that's because Zoom is changing the interface almost every day. But here's how
it's going. Everybody else, Edwin.
Yes, we're going to join the rest of the world. We have security procedures in place, so no one can, drop a nasty comment in. The attendees are coming in, and we're going to allow questions at the bottom of the hour. For now, if you want to ask me a question, you may send that question to ask@edwinblack.com, or you may use the QA part of your Zoom panel. Today, we're going to discuss whether or not a Nuremberg-style tribunal is needed to determine whether China is guilty of a criminal cover-up in terms of the Wuhan virus, the COVID-19. And if, in fact, they are guilty, what should the punishment be? So if anyone wants to send me a message, I will take it. I'm going to make some opening remarks, then I'm going to throw the conversation open to our two experts. First, nobody knows anything. Nobody knows with any certainty or clarity whether or not this was a criminal cover-up, whether this began as a bioweapon, whether this was just an accident, whether this was developed in the Wuhan Institute, or whether it was developed in whether it arose out of the wet market in Wuhan. But the implications are, the indications are, based on what I've seen, is that this was actually an accident that was created in the lab, and that led to a cover-up, a criminal cover-up. Started as an accident, like an oil spill is an accident, and escalated to a criminal act. If that is true, then China would be responsible for a massive damage, not only to the United States, but 190 countries for death, destruction, economic damage. Already there have been at least 7 lawsuits filed against China or individuals in China. One of them is a multi-trillion dollar class action. Hundreds of people have joined it. There is a ski lodge in Italy, which has filed a lawsuit. The state of Missouri has filed a lawsuit, and many others have filed lawsuits against China seeking reparations, seeking damages. These numbers are going to go into the trillions, I assure you. The question is, not only guilt, if there is guilt, but if there is guilt as indicated, what would the venue be? What would the remedy be? What would the jurisprudence be? The jurisdiction. People who don't know what they're talking about are talking about the International Criminal Court that was developed in the late 90s through the statute, through the Rome Statute. And it only covers criminal acts of a grave nature. And here we have to ask whether a cover-up is criminal negligence or some other form of criminal conduct. And it excludes most of the Western countries, the United States, Germany, the UK, Israel. None of these countries are a member of the International Criminal Court. And as a result, they have not consented to a jurisdiction. And it only involves grave acts such as massacres, et cetera. Whether this would be considered a grave act, we don't know. Can everybody hear me? Can everybody hear and see Nat? Eve, we've got various helpers helping us. Eve, can you see us? Edwin is shown as muted. Am I muted? Is everybody hearing me? I don't think I
can hear you.
Okay. Okay, good. So that's the International Criminal Court. Then there's the International Court of Justice. That was developed in the first year of the League of Nations. And it was to settle disputes about tariffs, about treaties, about commercial questions, things of that nature. And once again, I doubt that they have jurisdiction. There is the question of whether this would come under the responsibility to protect under the UN and could be a Chapter 7 enforcement. That would be subject to the Security Council, and there would be a veto by China. Now, there was a Nuremberg-style tribunal after World War II, the so-called IMT. That's the International Military Tribunal, and many other forms of Russian, Polish, and other war crime trials. All those occurred when the accused was a decimated, invaded, occupied country, and that country was Germany. China is not decimated. The world depends upon China. China's the second greatest economy. So there are local jurisdictions, meaning the domestic jurisdictions, but can they be availed of? We're going to ask an expert in civil litigation in the United States first. Nat Lewin, tell us about the foreign tort law.
Well, first, Edwin, just to begin, I'd like to congratulate you on the initiation of this program. And I'm honored to be on it with you and with Richard Heidemann, for whom I have great respect, and who is an expert in litigating against terrorism and other violations of international law. Now, let me say that with regard to this program, though, I do have an objection to begin with, because you've put the question in terms of having a Nuremberg-style tribunal. And as one who certainly myself suffered from the Holocaust, having lost three grandparents, any parallel to something like the Nuremberg trial and Nuremberg kind of proceeding is, I think, not appropriate in these circumstances. We're not talking about a government having deliberately gone out and performed genocide. But I think the question is a very legitimate one, Although, as I say, the way you characterize it in the title of this initial program troubled me when you invited me to come on it with together with Richard. The question is really, as you say, divided into two parts. One is the question of finding out the facts, and the other one is really applying the remedy. Finding out the facts at present is a very, very difficult task. There have been, I've seen programs, I've seen films, I've seen allegations. What's going to be needed at the very least before you have anything that would even be a kind of a trial of the people who are guilty and determining what you do is determining A, what the guilt, whether there was guilt, and what the level of guilt is, whether there was a deliberate effort in some laboratory to create a virus that would cause enormous damage. And some people have even suggested that maybe that's what China was doing, was really experimenting in some way to form some lethal kind of virus. That would, of course, amount to extraordinarily culpability. Or whether it was some kind of scientific effort in a laboratory which went wrong, and then China and the Chinese Communist government was guilty of a cover-up and of not taking the steps that prevented this from being the kind of global disaster that it has been. Now, determining those facts, the question is how do you determine them? And it does seem to me that certainly Congress is going to go and have to have a very substantial investigation. If we're talking about American plaintiffs, and you talked about litigation and lawsuits that have been brought, I think the burden on American courts with these individual class actions or actions by states against China, or some have said, apart from the question of foreign sovereign immunity, which is under congressional law a way of protecting foreign governments. Apart from that, the whole question of how one reaches any kind of assets that could be used to compensate those who have suffered. Now, I've
because we have a limited amount of time, let me say that that's an excellent introduction. I'd like to also agree with you that there's no comparison between the Holocaust, which murdered many people in the most despicable fashion, and what's going on here. But the reason Nuremberg was mentioned is because so many nations were involved in this activity. This was not just negligence, if it's true, but at least 8 scientists were disappeared right after they exposed this. And Nuremberg was given as a citation because it was one of the ad hoc tribunals. Remember, the IMT was invented on the spot, ad hoc, by the Allies. Let me throw it over to Richard Heidemann. Richard, obviously you have been engaged in this type of litigation before, cross-border litigation. Nat has suggested that Congress should have a, let's call it a 9/11 type commission or some other fact-finding activity. But the UK, Italy, Spain, any other country might object and say, wait a minute, we have been damaged too. And perhaps per capita, we have been damaged far more than anyone in the United States. And so I'm going to throw it to you. What do you think is the proper jurisdiction for perhaps 190 competing nations and thousands of claimants?
Well, Edwin, thank you for having both Nat and me on. As Nat properly indicated, the Nuremberg trial was a unique endeavor undertaken internationally to hold perpetrators of the most significant genocide in human history to hold them accountable, to bring them to justice. In the aftermath of the Holocaust, where there were clear war crimes, there was an attempted genocide designed to wipe out the Jewish people of Europe and elsewhere. And the Nuremberg trials resulted in a series of noted trials, convictions, and a measure of justice. But there you knew exactly who the perpetrators were to be charged. There had already been investigations. There was massive evidence.
Just a second. You say they knew who the perpetrators were. There was a trial. They actually had a fact-finding phase, just as you say. You and I have both seen, I'm sure, the massive volumes of evidence, which was accumulated by IBM.
And in this case, we're very early in this tragic plague status. We don't really know whether the source was bats or a laboratory or the human interaction, or whether it came from the open wild animal farms. All of this needs a complete investigation. Now, for Congress to launch an investigation, which presumably it will do, is of course going to be necessary from the U.S. government point of view. But the U.S. government doesn't usually launch investigations in order to help out victims. Victims are represented by individual lawyers. And here we have a massive amount of victims spread all over the world. To achieve justice in the United States, lawyers already are commencing activities in court based upon what little evidence they've amassed, some more than others, and they're bringing lawsuits. The Attorney General of Missouri, as you mentioned, has launched litigation. That litigation is designed to try to pierce through the Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act protection of the government of China, and they've done it by suing the China Communist Party. So using the court system in confluence with Congress, in confluence with the White House, in confluence even with the State Department and other foreign governments, may well lead us down a path to eventually a claims program, but more importantly, perhaps to a trial if the victims and their lawyers can overcome the immunities protection China enjoys in U.S. courts. Back over to Nat Lewin.
Well, before Nat answers, and I know your experience in criminal law is extensive, both in prosecution and defense, what you just heard from Richard and what we've seen in this list, I'm just going to read off that there's a $20 trillion Freedom Watch lawsuit. There is several class action suits. Mississippi is going to be suing. Missouri is going to be suing. And there's a ski lodge in Italy that's going to be suing. So the question is it civil and civil indemnification, as Richard said, or is there a potential criminal component? Because people disappeared, allegedly, because there was a criminal cover-up. You know, they say the cover-up is always worse than the crime. What do you say?
I think there are separate components here, and you have to separate them out. First of all, I want to address for a minute the Nuremberg Tribunal. The Nuremberg Tribunal was a question of assessing individual culpability on people who led the Nazi genocide. There were some who were either acquitted or not executed, but there was no question about the facts. As a matter of fact, Justice Jackson, who was the chief prosecutor, didn't call any live witnesses. The facts were there. The facts as to the culpability of the Nazi regime was there. The question was, which individuals were going to be executed and were going to suffer punishment as a result of what was done? That's a very different question.
There were defense attorneys and not everyone was found guilty, as you know. And there was an assessment of culpability, whether they should be hung or whether they should be imprisoned.
Correct. But that was a question of individual personal culpability. Here we're talking about compensation, basically. And the question is whether the American legal system, which would be immensely burdened by these actions, first of all, many class action authorities, and I'm not one of them, have noted that the class of plaintiffs is so large that it could not be brought within an ordinary class action. A court would not recognize it as a class action. As to the states, how do you get the facts? I think the only way to get the facts that would demonstrate the degree of culpability by China or by the Communist Party or both or any other entities would be with a national congressional investigation and ultimately with the creation of a fund which could use assets that China, the Communist Party of China, or whatever could be reached in the United States would be set up as a fund, and then some entity or person like Ken Feinberg, who has done that with the...
Yeah, I thought of Ken.
All these funds, who's not had a number of funds, would distribute them to those thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in the United States who were affected by it. Now, those in England, sure, they would have to rely in terms of their own jurisdiction on the facts that were found very likely in a congressional investigation. But to say that this should be handled by local courts in the United States is, I think, totally unreal and putting a burden on the courts, which would be impossible. The courts would be, federal courts would be faced with fact-finding, time-consuming questions that could not possibly be resolved.
Okay, let me throw it to Richard. Now, Richard, we heard what Nat had to say, as usual, great wisdom. I'm going to throw two things to you. First of all, he spoke about a giant fund, a giant debt, a giant reparation. Now, that sounds to me like Versailles. And you know, and Nat knows, and all students of history know, that the post-World War I giant war debt or reparation from the Versailles Treaty was basically one of the major causes of World War II. So let us say that even if in some sort of bizarre perfect world guilt could be assessed, let us say in some perfect world, China agreed through a massive amount of sanctions to contribute to this debt. Would it not create a new Versailles-like situation? And after you answer that question, I'll ask you, Nat said domestic courts can't really deal with this. And there's probably going to be another thousand of these. So I'm asking you, Richard, what is the fate of these Missouri lawsuits, Mississippi lawsuits, Florida lawsuits, and all these people who want to be first to the courthouse with their filing fees and take it from there?
So each of these lawsuits that have been filed, Edwin, have alleged different theories and different approaches to try to hold China accountable in U.S. courts. The Florida suit, for example, claims the wet market to be a commercial activity. The Missouri action talks about the virus labs being a commercial activity. You need, in order to sue China in the United States, you need to bring such an action against any foreign government in accordance with the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, which gives sovereignty to foreign countries. And then to sue them, you have to bring it under an exception to the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. a terrorism exception like we've done in so many other cases, Libya, Syria, Iran, or a commercial exception or another exception. Interestingly, Congress, which Nat mentioned in his opening points, Congress is already seeing some legislation to enable American victims to seek damages. Senators Blackburn and McSally introduced a bill called the Stop China Originated Viral Infections Disease Act.
Well, that's and quite a long name.
A similar bill that would strip China of its immunity and also prompt an international investigation into Beijing's conduct at the beginning of the crisis. If you had cases that would survive in a U.S. court or at least be pending, what often happens is a government-to-government understanding for those governments willing to enter into an agreement with the U.S. State Department for a claims fund. That's what Libya did to get off the State Department list of state sponsors of terror. Libya entered into a Libya claims fund. The White House, President Bush, signed an executive order. Sanctions were lifted. Libya paid $1.5 billion into a fund. It was administered with the State Department and the Treasury Department, and different claimants received different amounts of money. And it was a whole process. Getting to that process never happens at the beginning. It only happens at the end, after there is a real threat on the country to be held accountable. Just hearkening back to Holocaust era for a moment, look at the cases that were brought for Holocaust era restitution with an attempt to hold countries, to hold banks liable for having taken assets of victims, resulted in a settlement. It was brought about by a confluence of litigation, pressure from the State Department, foreign countries, and the vested interest of the other party. So here, the target other party is China or their Communist Party. They certainly have lots of assets. They certainly do big business in the United States and will want to do so in the future. So is it possible that this litigation, as part of an entire approach designed to protect victims, will produce some results? It'll be dependent, I conclude, by what do the facts show? What is the evidence? Where did this originate? And once it originated, was it covered up? And in covering it up, did they fail to report? Did they fail to comply?
Okay.
And did people suffer damages as a result?
In the 2 minutes we have left, Nat, this profusion of lawsuits in the United States, overseas, is it not the case that eventually, if this did come to some juridical process, all these lawsuits would be consolidated or merged into one? And second of all this discussion has been talking about civil damage. Are you ruling out any sort of criminal culpability?
With regard to the consolidation of the lawsuits, I have to tell you, it seems to me that ultimately, and this goes back to what Richard was suggesting, ultimately what happened in terms of compensation, individual compensation for the Holocaust, was what Konrad Adenauer agreed to with claims, and the claims that reparations that the German government provided to Israel essentially was the culmination of sort of the claims that individuals might have for the terrible things that Germany did. In terms of individual criminal culpability, that again is, there you get to the Nuremberg trial analogy. You're talking about individuals and how individuals are going to be punished criminally. In terms of punishing a country criminally, the only way you do that is by financial penalty.
Well, I'm going to wrap it up here, and then we're going to move to questions. Your observations are excellent. I would just note that Nuremberg was not the only war crimes trial against Germany, that there were additional U.S.-led prosecutions. There was the doctor's trial. There was the banker's trial. And many of these companies, which were found criminally liable, were dismantled, if you might say. I believe that's how we got aspirin on our drugstores from Bayer, which ultimately took it back. So now we're going to take 15 minutes of questions. And before I proceed, I would just like to say that Richard Heidemann, you've published a book involving international law. And what's the name of that book?
It's called The Hague Odyssey, and it focuses on Israel's battle against terror and battle for justice at the United Nations.
And our friend Jeff Bezos is selling that book for you, correct?
It is available, I'm told, on Amazon, yes.
Okay. And all right, so Nat doesn't have a book out now, but I'm sure he's working on one. Is that not correct, Nat?
I'm certainly working on it with the encouragement of my family and of one Edwin Black.
Well, I can only say that in the annals of jurisprudence, one of the greatest names, I'm sure Richard will agree with me, is Nat Lewin. You have represented some of the biggest names and some of the smallest names because you're driven by the issues and by jurisprudence. Let's take some questions. We've got a question here from, and by the way, if you have a question to anybody, just hit the QA at the bottom of your screen and you can ask a question. We have one from Chris in London, and he says, on April 20th, Kishore Mabuani, the author of China Won, the Chinese Challenge to American Primacy, stated in The Economist, that's a major financial magazine, that the West's incompetent response to the pandemic will hasten the power shift to the East. How can the West hold China responsible when it seems that the West seems to be in a position of weakness due to its dependence on China's production capacity? I'm going to throw that one over to Richard, but I want to remind Richard and everyone that Germany and Italy, because you know there were war crime trials in Italy and there were war crime trials in Japan. Most people don't know about the Japanese and Italian war crimes trials. These were vanquished nations. China is not vanquished. China doesn't have to cooperate with anyone. Nat has spoken about fact-finding. Nat has spoken you and Nat have both spoken about super funds. But the fact is, China just may not cooperate and may in fact be hostile and try to retaliate against any moves by withholding all the manufactured goods that it provides to the world. Go ahead, Richard.
So I'm going to return to the issue of the U.S.-China relationship, which is robust, notwithstanding all the current problems, ongoing trade and related issues before coronavirus. The trade that goes back and forth between the United States and China, the relationships between the United States and China, are very important government-to-government relations. China is doing a great deal of business in the United States. Therefore, the lawsuit brought by the Attorney General of Missouri attempts to pierce through the veil of immunity by saying, since China is doing such commercial activity in the United States, it can be sued in the United States. They go further, and they allege in their complaint that under Article 6.1 of the International Health Regulations, China had a duty to report, quote, all events which may constitute a public health emergency of international concern within its territory, end quote, within 24 hours. And we all know China didn't do that. So will it be possible if any of the litigants and any of the litigation already filed can survive through the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, if a federal judge allows that to proceed, can China be held accountable? Yes. Can, therefore, there be collection with assets in the United States? There can be collection. And those are essential elements. I'm not telling you it will happen, Edwin, and Nat will be the first to tell you it probably won't happen. But the fact of the matter is, people are trying through the use of the U.S. litigation system, immediately to attempt to hold China accountable.
All right.
Over to you, Nat.
Let's go to another question from Nick in London. ABC News is reporting that the Pentagon's National Center for Medical Intelligence submitted a report on the novel coronavirus pandemic back in November of 2019. And we keep taking this timeline further and further back. I think both of you might know that there was a California couple discovered, and it was suggested that they had contracted the disease back in November. And according to this report, that it was known that there would be a cataclysmic pandemic back in November. And this brings up an interesting point, a point right to your assertions. You've spoken about breach of duty. You've spoken about breach of responsibility. And I'm speaking about potential criminal conduct. Once eight guys disappear, it's no longer that you failed to do something. Now you've got a criminal cover-up. So just how far back do you think this goes? And is there going to be a threshold crossed if people can prove, as so many people are pointing out, that it was not only a breach, not only a sloppiness, but a criminal act in making people disappear and wiping clean their websites? Go ahead, Richard.
Well, to have a criminal act, you have to establish that culpability and do it in a jurisdiction where the courts have jurisdiction over the perpetrator. You earlier wiped out the idea of the International Criminal Court for good reasons. Same with the International Court of Justice, which doesn't apply for good reasons. I don't personally see at the present time, a U.S. Federal grand jury being able to identify criminal defendants over whom the United States would have jurisdiction and be able to serve an indictment and then would get extradition of that person to a U.S. court. And I don't see an international body at the present time doing so, notwithstanding some of the wild and crazy things that the prosecutor's office at the International Criminal Court is attempting to do. Over to Nat.
All right, Nat, do you want to pick up where Richard left off on that issue?
Well, I agree that in terms of criminal liability for somebody in China being brought to the United States to be criminally prosecuted, that's most improbable. Although, again, I mean, the fact is that American law extends to foreigners in foreign territory who commit criminal offenses in the sense that what they do is they injure Americans. And therefore, a foreigner who, if it can be shown that someone in a laboratory in Wuhan deliberately concealed what happened in order to injure American citizens, yes, I think there would be a basis for trying to extradite them, but there's no way that China is going to agree to deliver anybody like that to the United States.
All right, now we have a question.
Criminal prosecution. Again, we'll come back to the fact that there has to be some collective arrangement under which the assets that China or Chinese instrumentalities, whether it's the Communist Party or any other instrumentality, has that the United States can reach. There are enormous, enormous assets that the United States owes, after all, to China, and the debt that China has to the United States, and trade that China has with the United States. After all, that led the president initially to be reluctant to blame China because he had done this deal, this trade deal with China, which was going to bring billions of dollars to the United States. So there are assets that can be reached if the federal government, through congressional action, it can amend the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. The fact is, the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act is not a permanent barrier.
Are you saying it could be amended for retroactive enforcement? Would that not be an ex post facto deal?
No, I think Congress could, if it wanted to, amend the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act in order to make governments that deliberately engage in culpable conduct, criminally or very culpable conduct, liable for their acts, even though those acts have been done.
All right, let me stop you there, because I think your point is important. And we have another questioner, Ken Abramowitz from West Palm Beach. And Ken picked up just on your idea to distill his question and his comment. He says, we've already got the precedent with the lawsuits that occurred after 9/11, the lawsuits against Saudi Arabia, the lawsuits against Qatar in Turkey for that kind of thing. And so you've already pre-answered, but he is saying that there is a precedent. But I think your comment, and I'm going to ask Richard to give me just a 30-second reply. Richard, amend the Foreign Sovereignty Immunity Act. Is that step one?
It may not even be necessary, but yes, it's possible, step one.
All right, now we have a question here from Wes Headley in the Bay Area. It says it's been reported that the U.S. was involved with some of the research at Wuhan. There are increasing reports that this lab was working with the coronavirus and with bats. Is it possible China could release documents that show our involvement with these experiments? And if so, where would that lead? So I'm going to ask Richard about contributory negligence. What if we were involved in some of this? Maybe we were the guys who helped put it together, and then the genie got out of the bottle. What about that?
Well, let's twist it to a simple basis. Let's assume a U.S. company was engaged in that laboratory, and that U.S. company committed a wrong, whether it be just a mere negligence act or even gross negligence. Can they be sued in the United States by U.S. victims? Yes, they could be held accountable as a U.S. entity.
All right. Well, thank you there. And I'm going to wrap it up here because we only have a limited amount of time. I want to thank everybody from around the world who has attended. I want to thank Classrooms Without Borders, Sippy Gore, who and her colleagues who are helping proliferate this. If anybody missed this show, you can tell your friends to catch it on the edwinblackshow.com archive, which you will see. Be sure to buy Richard's book. What's it called again?
The Hague Odyssey.
Right. And by the way, I wrote a book, if you might want to know, about 11 of them. And you could find IBM and the Holocaust on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. That's it for right now, everybody. We're going to call it quits. If somehow this show looked like it was prepared, we had no idea what we were doing until about 30 seconds before we went on air, but we promised to get better. I'm going to end the show now by clicking the Zoom button. We'll see you here tomorrow at the same time. Bye-bye, all.
Thank you, Edwin. Thank you, Nat.
Yeah.